Hello, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. And today I have a guest who I think you'll just need to get some coffee, sit back and listen to if you're in sales management. Very top of mind for me because I'm in the process of working with a couple of vendors right now and putting some webinars together on this topic. But with me today is Max Cates. He is the author of 7 Steps to Success for Sales Managers. Now, his book was released in 2015, and it's coming on, you said, your year anniversary, right, Max?
Yes, the first year anniversary. And by the way, it's a pleasure joining you. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So Max is an expert in all things dealing with the management of all types of salespeople, correct? It's not just top of funnel. Could you elaborate on the book itself in terms of the areas of specialty that you're talking about?
Yeah, primarily this is the undercurrent that lies throughout this book is servant leadership, and I'll give you a little background on how I got into it in sales management and that kind of thing. First, I spent the first half of my career, just about 20 years, on the non-sales side, primarily in marketing, advertising, corporate communications, in leadership positions, and there again for Fortune 500 companies. But when I shifted over to the sales management side, I was really kind of surprised because I came from a background of employee involvement in which you would make decisions, planning procedures based on employee input. You know, you would get your employees involved in the process. You know, some call it employee participation, involvement programs. But basically, you would get them involved in decision making, and you would share in the process. You know, you would use their knowledge and their expertise to help come up with better decisions. This goes back to the 1940s with what's known as TQM, Total Quality Management, at Deming. But anyway, long story short, when I got into sales management, I found more and more of a command control type of management. And I'll typify this whole process by one conversation I had early in the going with another sales manager, and the manager was working on a pricing program. He was having problems. He was asking for my input. And we kind of discussed pricing and customer discounts and, a real wide variety. And then I asked him, I said, well, what do your reps think about it? Do you have their input? And his response was, well, no. Why would I want their input? These yahoos can't even make their objectives. I mean, why do I want them to help me run my job? So I was kind of, I was kind of surprised by that. But then, the more time I spent, the more I found out that it seems like, kind of a antiquated command control system was fairly prevalent, not only in the companies that I was working for, but in talking to other managers in other companies. So there again, that's kind of the impetus for it. And when I first started looking, I thought, there's got to be a body of knowledge on using employee involvement in the sales arena. So I went through Amazon.com, I did my research, and I was looking for employee involvement programs as they pertain to sales. And basically found nothing. So that was kind of the impetus for me getting involved in writing the book. And in addition to not finding any resources, the more data and research I found about sales managers encouraged me even a little bit more, because For example, one thing I found was that, one recent research program showed that only 50% of sales managers have received any kind of sales management training from the time that they were named sales manager. And in addition to that, for example, the top 25 business schools in the United States, only half of them offer any kind of sales management curriculum. So to kind of capsulize it, the book is really offered as an alternative, as an option that sales managers can refer to as a way to, enhance their own effectiveness. It's really something that hadn't been offered before, at least that I could find. And so it's an option to sales management. It's a way to kind of tap into the energy, strength, and experience of salespeople to make the sales manager's job easier and more effective.
Well, I know that part of effectiveness training that we focus on for sales reps is in three areas, really: time management, personal effectiveness, and communication. And it's all about, for top of funnel, it's all about trying to blend those three categories together to create an SDR who's consistently developing opportunities that they can pass to a quota-carrying rep in the field. Now, a lot of what I see is that sales managers are typically grown from AEs who did really well selling, and then they're all of a sudden walking in the door given a badge of, you are now, the magic wand over their head, you are now a sales manager.
Exactly.
Are you discovering that? Did you discover that a lot in your interviews?
Yes.
And things?
Yeah. Okay. and here's what I found from a research standpoint and also anecdotally. The kind of people who tend to get promoted into sales management jobs are kind of the sales superstars. Now, here's the irony of it, is that, great salespeople usually make poor managers. And the reason, I was reading one research study that showed as high as an 85% failure rate of sales superstars who have gone into sales management. And, there's a lot of reasons for that, in addition to not receiving sales management training. But, your typical, here's how it normally works, or here's what, and this is kind of an overgeneralization, but here's what I've seen personally and even in research studies. The super successful salesperson, when they're promoted, at first has this concept of, I'm successful, here are the things that I've done to be successful. I'm a great closer, I do great presentations, here's how I organize my files, here's how I set appointments. So, there's a very specific skill set that they have going into the sales management job. And the overall thought is, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my approach and I'm going to shape a sales team in my own likeness. And it just doesn't work. You have to, because a sales team is such a complex mixture of human dynamics that you can't go in and say, here's how we're going to do it, and here's the plan, mm-hmm. and I want you to follow me. If you follow me, then we're going to be successful. And I can even think back in my early career. I was the same way, man. I thought, I'm a great follower, so I'm going to use these things to be a leader. And what happens is, salespeople, as naturally independent as they are, they don't they're not real good followers. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a sales manager who comes up with a follow me plan, you know, a lot of sales teams will kind of smile and kind of nod and say, yeah, that's a great plan. But then what goes on behind the scenes is they kind of go on and do their own thing. Mm-hmm. And irrespective of, you know, what the plan is. You know, here's the analogy I use. You know, if you're a real good salesperson, I mean, if you're an outstanding salesperson, you might have up to a 50% closing rate. And that's a pretty good closing rate for a salesperson. But when you've got that kind of closing rate as a manager, you're going to fail because you have half your team working for you, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then you have the rest of your team who are either against you or indifferent. And either way, if your salespeople are indifferent or if they're resistant, it's not working with you. So, you know, it's real tough for a sales manager to come up with a plan and get everybody to follow them if they're not getting buy-in from the sales group. If the salespeople haven't developed a little sweat equity, mm-hmm. you know, if they haven't become part of the plan, and if they feel like they're not respected enough to be asked their opinion or asked for their input or asked for their involvement, the easiest thing in the world for a salesperson to do is kind of agree on the surface with a plan and then, you know, kind of make it an 8-to-5 job, you know, do my job, go home and forget it. So the whole idea of employee participation is to develop this sweat equity approach to get people involved in decision making, to get people involved in planning and organization, because the more they're involved, the more they buy into the program, and the more buy-in you have, the better their efforts are going to be, because it's their plan. So if they're out executing a plan that's theirs, they're going to execute better than executing somebody else's plan.
So what I heard you say earlier was there's a lot of tactical that a sales manager coming into the role will implement or want to put into play because it's something that's worked for them. If you have a plan like that and you want to enforce it, how do you get the other folks, your team, to buy into that? Do you present it as an option of this is one way we can get there and look for input to fine tune it? I mean, do you start with a plan that you present to them, or are you just bring them everybody in a room and saying, okay, here's our objectives for next year. Let's roll up our sleeves and design a plan together to get there.
Well, there's a variety of different ways to do it, and some I have seen some start with a plan, but what I've found to be most effective is just to start at ground zero with more of a vision, creating a vision with your reps. Starting out with, okay, for example, you get your reps in a room with you and you start out with, what do we need to be doing to be successful? And where do we want to go? How do we create a vision of success? For example, and in the book, I use the JFK moon landing vision. You know, John F. Kennedy created this crazy vision of landing a man on the moon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when you compare that to a sales objective or a sales vision, it might be we want to be, you know, the best. We want to be number one in our corporation. We want to be number one, in the state, or you know, whatever your ultimate, you know, your long-term vision is, and then develop an action plan to get there. But it first depends on getting your people involved and letting them know that, number one, we want to be the best we can be, and then asking, how do we actually get there? Mm-hmm. Now, once you set the vision, then everything starts falling down below that. And, in addition to that, you set mutually agreeable objectives for the sales team and mutually agreeable objectives for individual salespeople. In addition to that, you set specific ground rules, metrics. It's really important to develop the right set of metrics to make sure that they're commensurate with your overall vision. But once you get your employees involved in this and letting them know that I, as a sales manager, am your partner in progress, rather than I'm the guy who's telling you, here's how we're going to do it, then you start getting, you get a consistent series of input, and you develop in your work team what in the book is called an intrapreneurial approach. An intrapreneur is an entrepreneur who's operating in a corporate environment. And this kind of salesperson is the kind of person who's going to come to you with ideas on how to get the job done better, on sales techniques, on training. You're getting this consistent set of data and information flow coming into you that not only improves your decision making, but also it makes your job a lot easier because you're not having to do all the heavy lifting. The traditional command control manager is kind of a lone wolf. You know, he's kind of in his own silo. He or she is in his own silo, and they're developing plans, procedures, ways to monitor success, tracking metrics, kind of on their own. And what the book emphasizes is that the days of the lone wolf sales manager are pretty much over now for a number of reasons. Number one, you've got global competition. In addition to that, you have, as you had mentioned earlier, technology, rapidly advancing technology. Mm-hmm. You also have a workforce that's changing dramatically because now we have baby boomers who are being replaced by millennials, and they have their own set of challenges, to traditional managers. For example, millennials are more likely to like to work in teams. They're kind of collaboration oriented. They also seek more input than baby boomers did. They're more technologically savvy. So there's a whole different set of management needs there as we see the workforce changing. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gets into one of your prior questions is, what have I seen developing since I started on the book? And that's one of the biggest changes is, because officially millennials are now the largest workforce segment, having replaced baby boomers. So, it takes a lot of complex approaches to management that the lone wolf manager just has, you know, you just can't do it. It's just too complex and too challenging. One thing, you know, one premise of my book is this, that, you know, it's a lot easier to be a successful servant leader than it is to be a poor manager. Be a poor manager takes a lot of time. I mean, you know, you got to invest a lot of time in planning and developing and monitoring, and, you know, it just takes, it's really a lot of heavy load, a lot of heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can share it with your reps, it makes, not only makes your job easier, but makes your decision making better, and it creates an environment, a sales culture, that's going to be more successful than a typical command control sales culture.
Especially in the newer sales models, like the ones that we advocate, which is separating out the sales roles into multiple role types. And if there's one manager over all of that, it makes it difficult to be a command and control, because there are very different styles of management and managing depending on the role of the salesperson. As an example, the top of funnel folks, the folks that I work with, business developers, are really on a daily metric rhythm. I mean, we're looking for more of that hard worker profile. They're coming in and doing a lot more communication on a daily basis with daily metrics that are actionable in nature that they're trying to meet. And then when the prospect moves further into the sales pipeline, we get more of a relationship building, you know, a salesperson. And so the metrics may change to weekly, quarterly, depending on the size of the actual revenue potential. But if you have one manager over all that and you're trying to micromanage it, it's an impossible task. Something's going to break in that type of model. One of the other things that I thought was interesting from your book, and I'm a big fan, being an engineer, of course, of the Lean Six Sigma kind of, you know, that methodology, and I apply it actually to my framework. I noticed that you've also adopted, taken pieces or maybe even the whole thing to looking at the morale, the success of the team, performance. Could you elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, what I've recommended. Well, actually, I've got two models here: the Six Sigma and the Deming process. But just to give you an example on Six Sigma, you can use Six Sigma in a sales environment. And what I recommend is to use it as a teamwork tool. For example, the Six Sigma process has five basic steps. First, this is part of the whole continuous improvement concept. In sales management, you know, continuous improvement, meaning that you don't settle for last year's accomplishments. You continuously build and continuously make your sales process better year by year. But anyway, using Six Sigma, the first part of it is to define your problem. And in a teamwork environment, let's say, for example, that you have a sales cycle that's 2 weeks longer than the industry average. You need to compress your sales cycle. So you define the problem.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have a longer sales cycle than you would like, and then you define the components of that problem. So it could be a lack of technical assistance. It could be a level of customer knowledge. It could be discounts and all these things that impact your sales cycle,
mm-hmm.
that maybe you're not offering enough discounts or promotional incentives. Maybe you're not offering adequate technical assistance to make the sale faster. Maybe the customer doesn't know enough about the product and they're taking longer to make a decision. So you define the problem and the components of the problem. And then the second step is to measure. Now, and by the way, let me back up a little bit. You do this with your team. You sit down because these people are really the ones who know the answers to your problem. Yep. If you have a slow sales cycle, a manager might have some ideas of what the problem might be, but you could probably go to any salesperson and say, hey, you know, we need to make this sales cycle faster. How do we do it? And they could probably tell you. They know the answer. So sitting down, getting your team involved in the process, asking them these questions, defining the problem, and then number two, how do you measure it? Well, in this particular case, you might measure it by contract dates. Okay, so you develop a measurement tool, and you get the salespeople to identify contract dates and as well the status of every particular customer. You know, where do they stand as far as product knowledge? Do they need technical assistance? So you develop the data to feed your ultimate decision making, and then you analyze it. The third step is to analyze that data, to take a look at the dates, the discounts, you know, for example, what level of technical assistance was involved in the sale. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth step is to improve. And for example, let's say that you find that customers who have a technical person come out and help them in the early going of the sale buy faster. So that tells you right there, we need to get more technical people out on the sale early to mm-hmm. speed up the sales cycle. So, or it could be discounts. You know, maybe you're showing a positive correlation between the level of discounts offered and the speed of the sale. Maybe customers will buy faster if they're offered a discount earlier. So you institute, you implement, you know, these various tactics to improve your sales cycle. And then the fifth one is really the easy part, and that's continuing to track your sales cycle, continue to monitor incentives, to provide training, and all the administrative support to implement those improvements that you've identified. So, and that's kind of a nutshell of the Six Sigma using a specific example. Mm-hmm. But it's basically a five-step process, and the key thing is getting your team involved in it, because they're going to provide you with rich data. But even more importantly than that, they're going to buy into the process and really make your execution a lot more effective in the long run. And you know, the other kind of things that you look at in this whole Six Sigma process is, one of the key things is root cause analysis. You know, too many times when we get involved in problem solving, especially in sales management, you take a look at a problem and you take a look at how we're going to solve it without necessarily looking at what the root cause of that problem is.
Yeah.
So Six Sigma gets you to root cause, because you've defined the problem and you develop metrics to measure how your solution is working to the problem. So, you know, instead of saying, okay, our sales cycle needs to be speeded up, or we need to, you know, be generating more new business, you know, what do we do? Do we offer new incentives, or what do we do on a superficial basis just to kind of get the problem addressed and move on to other things? Mm-hmm. Well, Six Sigma goes below that down to the root cause, and it develops a sustainable program that you can use year after year. But in addition to that, to developing a sustainable program that's going to be successful on an annual basis, it also gives you the numbers to see where, you know, maybe this solution at one time worked, but a year later it doesn't seem to work as well. So we need to go back and take another look at it. You know, and I'll give you an example. In a Six Sigma process, you can come up with, with your sales cycle. Let's say that you're trying to compress your sales cycle and you found out that discounts really made a difference today. But in a year, you find out through your tracking that discounts aren't working as well. Customers are getting inured to discounts up front. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to look at some other alternative, because they just, you know, everybody's offering discounts, so it's kind of diluting the effectiveness of your discount program. So it's that's the other good thing about the Six Sigma process, is that sustainability.
Yeah, I mean, we use a portion of that actually to define at the top of funnel the pain points that we're going to have in our sales conversations. And we actually settled on the McKinsey issue tree, because sometimes the Six Sigma, the five whys, was a difficult thing for some clients to grasp. So we use this issue tree where we start with a root issue and then we drill down from there and eventually get to root cause. But it's more of a less structured way, I guess, of just kind of branching off of a tree to say, well, it's this problem, but that means it's really comprised of all these different things. And that allows us to then take those pain points and create effective campaigns for email or scripts for voicemail, things like that, tactically. So I love the idea of looking at this and analyzing it through the root cause, because it does, everything changes. And one of the things that I think your book really, really speaks to is the fact that this is something that you don't set it and forget it. It's a continual cycle of continuous improvement. We're really trying to build a cohesiveness with our teams, but also, you know, stretch goals and get to the point where we can continually improve the sales environment and also the revenue potential.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, now that you mention stretch goals, you know, one point that I make in the book is to stretch, but don't overstretch. because yeah. Stretch objectives are great. You know, one of the studies that I was taking a look at, first, 75% of high-performing sales teams set stretch objectives, set mm-hmm. objectives that are 10% or higher. However, so that, I mean, that's the good side of it. On the other side of it, sometimes we have a tendency to overstretch. And, you know, it's estimated that as high as, you know, 80% of stretch goals are not achieved. So, you know, instead of, here's one thing that I put in the book. Instead of making, for example, a 15% sales goal that you know you can't achieve, why not set it at even 8%, mm-hmm. which is a stretch, but something that you can achieve. And here's what happens. Let's take a look at 2 years' time. It would be better to achieve 8% on an 8% objective over mm-hmm. 2 years' time. You have 16% growth, as opposed to 15%. And even if you achieve 8%, mm-hmm. on a 15% objective, you've made the same, you know, you've made the same percent of increase. However, it's viewed as a failure.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of demoralizing for a sales team when you overstretch, when you can make that stretch objective a little bit more moderate, but something achievable.
Indeed, indeed. Called 7 Steps to Success for Sales Managers, a strategic guide to creating a winning sales team through collaboration. Now, Max, how can people get a hold of you if they want more of your time to discuss the material in the book, or are there other learnings that people can flock to you for that relate to this book?
Well, I do regular articles on LinkedIn, and probably the best way to take a look at a real wide sampling is to go to my LinkedIn account, and I have a full full array of articles there that all pertain to subjects from my book. And then also, you know, all the booksellers online have excerpts from the book as well, including Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, you know, Safari, just any kind of bookseller online has the book as well.
Very good. So LinkedIn is one way to get a hold of you. And is there a website that you have that people can go to, or is it mainly through the LinkedIn vehicle?
It's primarily through LinkedIn.
Okay. So for those of you, again, the book is on all the major retailers. It is an excellent read for those of you who are in management or even considering going into management, because you know that a lot of times as we're the more tenure we have with the company, there is a little bit of an expectation that we're going to be moving up into management. And this will give you a well-rounded recipe, if you will, of how to get there and get there in a way that's going to ensure success for you, your team, and also just, you know, the quality of life of a sales team, I think, will be enriched by reviewing and reading and following the steps in Max's book. Thanks again, Max, for your time. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Marilyn. Well, I appreciate it, too. Thanks a lot.